Hey, you're listening to the Back-to-Back podcast from Fault Radio, the show where we sit down back-to-back with the producers and labels that are getting us excited. I'm your host, Brennan Coe, and today my guest is a San Francisco-based guitarist, Grammy-nominated musician, producer, and engineer. You may have heard the music in collaborations with names such as Ryuichi Sakamoto, Tycho, Scott Pagano, and more. Or maybe you know of their discography, which stretches across labels from North America, Europe, and Japan, including 12K, Plancha, Sub Rosa, and Ghostly International. My guest's music has often been described as electroacoustic in nature, while others would say traditional ambient music. I have so many questions I want to ask them, so without further ado, Christopher Willits, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Brennan.
As I mentioned, you're a Grammy-nominated artist, musician, producer, and engineer. You've worked with a lot of names people might recognize, so how the heck did you find out about Fault Radio end up in this situation?
Well, I've heard about Fault for a little while, and it's really cool that you guys are plugging away and just like keeping some underground spirit alive, you know, in the Bay Area and abroad. So yeah, I'm grateful you guys reached out, and I think there's some really fun stuff that we can do together.
I agree. I'm totally honored that you would take the time to talk with us. I've been doing a lot of research on you to ask you some interesting questions. And to do that, I've been browsing your Instagram a little bit, and I wanted to ask you, is that VW bus you travel across country to various places, is that actually your VW bus?
That is. Yeah, that is White Van. That's been a really great friend to me over the last, it's been about 10 years now that I've been the steward of that fine vessel. And it's so fun. I mean, it's just a home on wheels. So it's great for road trips, and if I'm touring that's within driving vicinity, that's the ideal thing right there. And of course, just for camping and getting away from the city, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I noticed that you like to post a lot of photos of nature and like very beautifully composed photos. Where are you going generally on your travels?
You know, everywhere. Like whenever I'm touring, I usually try to take a little bit of time just to explore nature around those areas. But I mean, living in the Bay Area, there's so much stuff just right out here, you know, and even within half a day drive, you can get out to the desert and be in some incredibly surreal places. Some of those recent photos, those are out at White Sands. My family lives back in Kansas City, and I've been helping my family through my mom and dad through the pandemic. And so I've had a couple road trips back and forth through the country, and yeah, the desert never ceases to amaze, especially when you got the White Van is your comrade there. It's just incredible to explore those areas.
Yeah. Every great VW bus, I think, has a name. So I'm really glad that you've given yours a name. How did it get that name? Is it just the paint color?
I think that's, it's the most neutral name possible. Yeah. It's this cool creamy white color, and there's a few names, and it's like, no, this is White Van. And also I have another VW bus, which is Green Van. So, you know, they're partners in crime there.
Yeah. Well, you grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, and you're now here in California, and you grew up playing the piano first, from what I understand, but then you kind of gravitated towards guitar, and that's your main instrument now, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And I heard that you have a special kind of a Moog guitar.
Yeah, the Moog guitar.
Mm-hmm. What is that? Like, what makes it so special?
Thing about a Moog guitar, I mean, it's a guitar, but it has a self-sustaining system on it. So every string has essentially like an electromagnetic feedback loop. So if I'm holding down, you know, like a G note, then as long as my fingers are pressing it down, the string continues to resonate. Or if I'm holding down a whole chord, like a G major chord, as long as those four fingers are holding down the strings just keep resonating. So that just has this incredible opportunity for other types of voicings and melody lines and the way that the sustain can carry on into things. So, you know, for years I've been developing my own guitar processing systems, and those have emerged into a lot of the Envelope open source tools that we offer to people as well. And just having this guitar where I can hold any note as long as I want and run it through these processing systems, it's really a dream come true.
I bet you must get some like interesting interplay when you are doing like an open G chord rather than like a bar chord, because you're not actually pressing down on all the strings in like an open chord. So there must be some sort of like interesting like tonalities you can do by choosing different positions.
There's all kinds of harmonics you can get from the string. So the harmonic is essentially the vibration of the vibration. So you have like a G note, but then as that's vibrating, you get these other intervals that start to kind of come out of that. And because the electromagnetic feedback is so strong, the harmonics can get quite intense as well. So as much, it's so fun to play, but it's also like you have to tame it consistently because there's just so much energy that's coming off of it. It's really fun. I'm always learning new ways to play melody lines and chords with it. You know, it's a guitar, but it's so much more as well. It's really its own kind of instrument.
And you kind of went from being a student and then you pursued your music career, but then eventually you came back to like academia as a teacher, and you've done workshops and you've instructed at places like CCA, the California College of the Arts, San Francisco Art Institute, Berkeley City College. What kind of classes or I guess seminars were you teaching generally?
Yeah, a whole slew of stuff. I mean, I realized quickly out of grad school, it's like learning all this and sharing it with people became a really important part of my creative process. It's one thing to share it within the kind of, you know, expression of music. And that's, I think, the most important thing to me. It's very emotional. It hits you on a deep spiritual and physical level. But also when you can talk into the details of process with students, with colleagues, everyone is learning something together, and you can kind of pop the hood open into all of that complexity and magic that's happening in the music and start to expand your creativity. And so, once I got out of grad school, it was kind of like, I went to grad school to learn more, but when you get an MFA, it's not really going to help you get more shows or set up more, releases and whatnot. So I was like, well, I should take my love for teaching and then also couple that, obviously, with my love for creating. And I started to look for different teaching gigs around the Bay Area and was really grateful to find some amazing opportunities. And it's been a huge part of my journey. And oftentimes when I'm touring, I'll do guest lectures at other institutions and just, get this conversation going more. Because I think a lot of the tools in, kind of procedures and academic music, at one time it was very academic. And over the last 20 years, we've pulled a lot of that out of academia and made it more accessible for people. So in a lot of ways, that's my mission in teaching, is to make things accessible and equitable so everyone has opportunity to be as creative as they possibly can.
So in that sentiment that you just talked about, that's kind of what you fueled into some of your other projects, namely Overlap and Envelop, right? So I wanted to ask you first about Overlap. What can you tell people about Overlap that they might not be familiar with?
Well, Overlap was the seed of Envelop. Overlap is a project we got going in the early 2000s, not too long after I moved to the Bay Area, and we were setting up all kinds of events. And we had different curves and ways that we thought that we could keep growing. And we just decided to focus on the production side of it. So creating interesting work, audiovisual content within a crew and strong friendship of artists and designers, and then being able to share the work that we're doing in different events. And so we've done a number of different event series around the Bay Area over the last, it's been almost like, 18 years now. And from all those experiments, it actually led to the nonprofit of Envelop. So in a lot of ways, we still think of Overlap as like this kind of creative vessel, this kind of like seed generator. The structure is very collaborative. We're essentially just a collective of friends and designers that play with energy. We play with sounds and images. And the way that that's really kind of anchored itself in recent years is in the Overlap studio in Oakland. So me and one of my best friends, Ryan Kleeman, we've developed a studio that's in the Fruitvale neighborhood of Oakland, and we do a lot of mastering and production work for other artists in there. So although we're not super active in doing events anymore, we're very active on the production side and helping people voice their expression and get their music out there.
Mm-hmm. Are there any programs like for overlap for people to like learn what you know on the audio engineering side? Are you giving classes like that to people?
You know, we used to do a lot of classes through overlap, and things have been so busy with my own music and then also Envelop that we really scaled it back to just focus on production work. In the future, we might scale that again, but we also have a lot of education ideas that are bubbling up with Envelop. So I think most of the energy is going to go that direction, and we'll keep focusing on the Overlap Studio to do mastering and production projects.
Mm-hmm. And we've been mentioning Envelop, and that is the space at the Midway SF. I guess you could call it something like a sound bath. Maybe you could describe it better, but it's like an immersive listening venue.
Yeah, exactly. It's an immersive listening space. And yeah, we do sound baths there. The whole thing is an instrument when you really boil it down. And it's an instrument that puts a microscope on the music. It allows you to really be inside of music like you've never been before. I mean, our whole goal is to bring people together through the listening experience. And so we use technology, we use sound to make that happen, to make the impact happen of connection. And so, yeah, when you walk into Envelop SF, there's 32 speakers that surround you, and we do all kinds of album listenings. We do a bunch of live performances. We have workshops that talk about the different tools and the tech that's behind it all. And we also do some wellness events like some yoga and some sound baths. And we have full on dance parties as well. I mean, anything you can think of, any way that serves the music and community, we can make it happen in there. So yeah, we got that going in. It's unbelievable. This last year of a pandemic is like maybe lose track of time a little bit, but in 2017, sure. So like 4 years ago, we got Envelop SF going. And then since then, with the pandemic included, which we didn't, you know, we were basically shuttered the whole time. We've done over 700 events, which I kind of couldn't believe when I looked back. We had to gather some numbers for some different grant proposals and stuff. And it kind of made us reflect of just how busy and active things have been, but also just kind of celebrate that like we've gotten this off the ground and we've learned so much through the process in terms of how we can really benefit and positively impact community through the experience of listening. You know, we really believe that it's one of the most profound ways to create empathy with people. And it's something that anyone can connect to. You know, music is this universal language. Mm-hmm. And everyone in that room may not agree the same about their political views or whatever it might be. But having that really human experience of feeling together and empathizing with the music and empathizing with each other in that intimate listening space is really important for us as a community, and to kind of trust each other more, to get inspired and take the next steps that we need to do as a society to problem solve. So yeah, mm-hmm. We're here to inspire people and connect people, and music, especially immersive music, is such a fun and powerful way to do that.
Well, I think that's a beautiful segue to listen to a track from that album. I'm going to cue up Coast, which is the second track off of the album Sunset. It was released in 2019 on Ghostly International. You can pick it up on Bandcamp or wherever you get your music. And let's get into Coast by Christopher Willits. was Coast off of the album Sunset by Christopher Willits.
Thanks for not asking me to do an unplugged version.
Well, now I might ask for another track. The album notes say, begin the music 15 minutes before the sun sets. I'm imagining myself going out to Ocean Beach in San Francisco, right as the sun is setting over the Pacific Ocean, sitting in the dunes, listening to this music. I think this is a really, really beautiful accompaniment to that scenery. When you were making the album, did you often go visit vistas like that to get the inspiration for what that might sound like?
You nailed it. I mean, it was Ocean Beach the majority of the time. Yeah, as I would make new mixes, I would go out there to test it, either solo or with some friends, and we would wear headphones and play it at the same time. And yeah, Ocean Beach, like, there's that one area that's not too far from Sloat, which is there's a great little area right there. Pacifica, tested it out there. Funston, also got to test it out when I was in Hawaii, and that was incredible as well. So yeah, but you know, you could just start. You don't even have to be staring at the sunset. You could just start it anytime. But I wanted to have some focus on kind of the procedure of it, but really, you know, you can listen to this at any time of the day, but definitely recommend if you start at 15 minutes before the sunset, there's an important part that happens about 15 minutes in and then after, and you can hear the colors changing, going from kind of the warmer tones into the cooler tones.
Yeah. It's also described as, you know, starting warm, going to cool, just like the sun. And also in the album, it comes with immersive files. How should listeners enjoy these immersive files? Do they need special equipment or like a sound setup?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Yeah, we're still in the beginning stages of how immersive audio can be streamed. And we're starting to see some really interesting developments with all of that. But currently it's still a little bit like rough around the edges. And so the way that I've decided to share the immersive files of Sunset is simply as like a download link that comes either from Ghostly if you buy the album or if you buy it from Bandcamp. It's in like the bonus liner notes though there, and you can grab it. And so I think it's important first to talk about like what is an immersive file versus something right. You would just hear on like Spotify or Apple Music or another streaming service. And this is what's so cool about immersive audio is that you can scale the way that the space of the sound is presented for people based on, you know, different platforms or different situations. So when I'm mixing Sunset for streaming platforms, what I did was I mixed it in spatial audio. So I used all of the Envelop for Live tools. These are tools that the Envelop nonprofit puts out there for free. They're super accessible and easy to use with Ableton Live. And I made a spatial audio mix of all the tracks. And what that means is you're hearing this three-dimensional space just with headphones, and you can use any headphones to listen to spatial audio. Some of the new Apple kind of spatial audio stuff might confuse people a little bit because you have to have like AirPod Pros and certain devices and stuff. That's just for Apple spatial audio. But spatial audio as a general technology, just any headphones work. And what you're having is essentially a three-dimensional illusion of space and just headphones. So yeah, it works well for, you know, Spotify and whatnot. But if you wanted to listen with multiple speakers, you need to have a way to be able to play that content back, and it's going to be a different file because currently it's just not super elegant to be able to have a multi-channel file that's streaming and then playing into your home. We're getting there, and there's a lot of fun things to talk about soon, but it's still not exactly there in terms of like a clean and clear pipeline for people. So what I did was I made a third order ambisonic file of Sunset of all the different tracks. And ambisonics is the foundation of immersive audio that we utilize within Envelop for Live. And it's also predominantly the main type of immersive audio that we focus on in Envelop SF. And what's so cool about it is it's essentially open source. There's not any corporate gatekeeper that's, you know, running some type of licensing situation on it. So it's open and accessible for people to utilize and continue to develop on. And it's also scalable. So you can take this immersive file that you're mentioning, these sunset immersive audio files, and utilizing any type of ambisonic player, and Envelop for Live has one that's built into it, you can then set up however many speakers you want, and you can get this full spherical experience of the sound. So in Envelop SF, we have 32 speakers, and that's amazing because you can have all this angular resolution of how the vibration of the sound is moving around a space and how that's affecting us. But you can also just have, you know, four speakers set up, or six speakers, or eight speakers, and this same file will create that immersive experience of the music for you.
That's amazing. That is something to look forward to. I have never heard of it before I checked out this album. So that's all really exciting to me. I'm someone who wishes they could be more of an audiophile. Maybe one day I'll strike it rich and I'll be able to get a good speaker system. But it sounds like I could just enjoy this in like the headphones I have now.
Yeah, just headphones is great. And if you do want to jump into it, all you have to do is check out envelop.us, go to the software link, and you can start to read up on, you know, how these tools are working. I also lead immersive audio workshops within our online space, Envelop Stream. So welcome to join that sometime, and that'll give you the overview of all the technology, the history of it, how the tech is working, how you can start to use it creatively.
Great. And we'll try to include all links to all those things Christopher just mentioned in the description for this episode, so you guys can go check them out. How was it working on that plugin that works with Ableton that you mentioned, the Envelop plugin? Did you have to learn a little bit about coding, or were you kind of just like the creative mind behind it? Like, hey, I have this idea. I want this to be implemented.
It's been incredible. I mean, our lead developer on that has been Mark Slee. He's an incredible developer. And we also worked with our friend Rama Gottfried, who's an incredible Max programmer. And then Roddy Lindsay got this going initially. He was doing first prototypes back in like 2015. And so when we first met up, we were playing with all this, and, you know, I know a lot about Max, and so I was able to kind of get in there and offer feedback and test things and whatnot. But then Mark just took it and ran with it and just like developed the current version. And it's on the rails now, we're just so grateful. So it's amazing to see. And we've got some really fun things coming on the pipeline as well. But yeah, essentially with any recording in Ableton Live, you can drop these tools on some tracks and you can start to tell it where to go in three-dimensional space. By default, use headphones and you can have a spatial audio experience of whatever you're doing to the sound. And then if you have multiple speakers, you can go a little bit deeper, and it's just, that's where all the fun really starts to happen. I mean, headphones are great, but when you can actually listen with people you love, or I mean, even strangers, and just like share that space of sound moving around you physically, for me, that's like, nothing's better than that. It's just the most incredible experience of music.
Yeah. And we got a little sidetracked because I was too interested about everything that he did for Envelop and how he spatially mixed it. So sorry to everyone. I wanted to ask you more of how you made certain elements in this album, but I'm going to save them for the next album that we're going to listen to, because I think they apply equally as well there. So we're going to listen to a track from Christopher's album that he did in collaboration with Ryuichi Sakamoto. Ancient Future is the name of the album. Ryuichi Sakamoto, probably most famous for being a member of the Yellow Magic Orchestra, as well as being an amazing composer in his own right. And we're going to listen to the very first track off of this album, titled Reticent Reminiscence. Enjoy. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone. As I mentioned, that was Reticent Reminiscence off of Ancient Future, the second collaboration between Christopher and Ryuichi Sakamoto. For this one, Sakamoto provided the piano pieces to you, and then you use that to work off to create the album. Is that kind of the creative process for this one worked?
Yeah, exactly. He had made a bunch of recordings, and then we had talked about, you know, this idea that we wanted to make this album. It was almost like a darker hued ambient jazz type album. And yeah, it incredible process working on that, like both albums, working with Sakamoto. Just a lot of telepathy going on, a lot of exploration into the sound. We just dove in and, you know, learned so much through both of those albums. Really grateful for Sakamoto. And I, at the time, it was so fun and we were just flowing with it. But now as I look back, you know, with what Ancient Futures, what, it's almost 9 years old now, I realize how much Sakamoto actually mentored a lot of the stuff I'm working on now. He kind of like, he really brought to focus kind of a more of a depth in the flow and the timing of things that I was already interested in, but he helped to really like put a spotlight on it. So yeah, super grateful for Sakamoto, for his mentorship and friendship.
How did that conversation between you two happen? Because it's not every day you get to, you know, reach across the aisle and work with someone who's considered, you know, a visionary in electronic music like Sakamoto is. Were you guys kind of have a chance meeting, or was this something that you was more premeditated, that you reached out to him to see if he would be interested in doing with you?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing how it all happened. So he's an incredible just listener. He's always, you know, listening to all the new kinds of music that are coming out. And he latched on to 12K, and this is around 2006, I want to say. And he reached out to Taylor initially and asked him to do this remix project. And this is it was called Chain Music. Basically, he started this idea. He gave the music to another artist. Another artist gives it to another artist, and it keeps going like a chain letter, but it's chain music. And and then we had chatted, and then Taylor was like, yeah, you should get involved in this. And so it was kind of funny how it worked, because like at the time I got it, this music was getting like super complicated, and it just wasn't even sounding that interesting at that time, because I feel after, you know, a handful of people had kind of touched this remix, it was just getting totally disjointed. So I was like, I hit up Sakamoto. I was like, it's cool if I just completely shift the direction of this, right? And he's like, do whatever you want. And so I just made this super meditative kind of change to the whole thing and like pushing this different direction. And I think that caught his attention, because after that, I remember him asking me, he's like, do you meditate? And I was like, actually, I do. And he's like, I can hear it in your music, and I'm, you know, really love what you're doing here. So we started just having a conversation about things. And then we really connected when I was playing a show in New York, and this was around late 2006 or so. And then he was like, hey, I see you're in New York. You should come through the studio and maybe we can just jam for a little bit. I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. So I went over there. We had some really strong Dragonwell tea, and we just jammed for hours. And that became our first album, Ocean Fire. And the rest is just flowing from that. You know, we just developed this conversation of music. You know, every time we're talking, it's about what does the music need? Where is it going? What's the feeling? It's really telepathic. It's incredible. You know, it's one of those moments. It's kind of like when you meet someone and they became your friend, but it almost felt like you were already friends before you were friends. There was that vibe that was happening with Sakamoto.
Right. And,
just incredible to keep, you know, collaborating and discovering these new sound worlds with him. It's been really, really fun.
Any Any promises in the future for a third collaboration album together?
Well, see, I got to get through this new solo album and a couple other things. But yeah, I mean, there's always a possibility for more. We'll see where it goes. We've been doing some fun stuff in Envelope, where he gave me all of the layers of his album Async, which is one of his best albums. And then I mixed that using all the Envelope tools. And brought that in. You know, we do listening events in Envelope SF of Async, and that's been really, really fun. So yeah, things are kind of, in terms of our collaboration, things are drifting into the world of immersive audio a lot more. And someday I would love to go back to Ancient Future and take the stems and do a full immersive remaster of all that. That's definitely on the to-do list at some point.
When you're working on I guess it was after Ancient Future had already come out, you did a video series with Ableton, I think it was called Create, and you had you kind of mentioned this album and the process you had with Sakamoto, as well as your use of field recordings in the album, and you described the use of field recordings as texture. So I was wondering, how do you go out and get your field recordings? Like, do you use certain equipment, and where do you go also?
You know, it depends on what I'm trying to record, but like anymore, I'm really interested in recording the full sound field to really capture the acoustic vibe of that place. And so I'm often using a Sennheiser Ambio microphone or the new Rode Soundfield microphone, which is incredible. That one's somewhat new and really, really solid. And so with that immersive microphone, it's recording a full sphere of sound around it. And then you can take that and using other immersive audio tools or the Envelope for Live toolkit, you can start to move that into your compositions. So yeah, I'm really interested in like the whole kind of landscape of sound that's happening in spaces most of the time. But then sometimes I'll just want to have a spot mic on, you know, like a stream or some cool cricket sound or a bug, things like this. Some of my favorite field recordings recently had been in the Amazon jungle, the Peruvian jungle. It's just a symphony of sound. You can hear nearly every frequency of the spectrum, stuff that's going above our hearing, surely stuff that's going below as well, and just a symphony. As the night opens up and you have all these bugs and frogs and things like moving around, it's really incredible.
How do you pick the right field recording for a song that you're working on? Because you can go you could record the ocean, you could record cicadas, you could record a whole bunch of things.
You know, it's all about the vibe, and sometimes it's very clear what I want to hear. Like I'll be composing something and I'll want to have this kind of photographic thing happening. That's the way I think of field recordings. It's like music is very abstract and flowing. It's all these colors and shapes and patterns. And then a recording of a space is very photographic and kind of set it and anchor it within this time and place. And so there are times when the music wants that I feel like Sunset has a lot of that. My last album before that, Horizon, had a lot of field recordings as well, because I wanted to have a physical space and then this more kind of abstract energy that's moving through it. So sometimes I'll be like, I really know what I want. I'm going to go out and I'll find that recording. Other times I'm just having fun playing and just trusting my intuition and recording a bunch of different places and ecosystems. And then I have a library of that stuff. I'll go back and listen. Also, my friend Ryan Kleeman, who's an incredible sound designer, incredible engineer on every level, but in terms of field recording, the guy is crazy. I mean, he can, you know, his mic techniques, I mean, even just like we'll be in the field and he'll like hold a mic still for like an hour, you know, I mean, that kind of like devotion and precision and like capturing sound, like he is so passionate about it. So amongst, all of us, tons of Ryan recordings, bunch that I've made too, and some other friends, like basically have this whole catalog. And then I can go through there as I'm composing and think, okay, what makes sense for this piece? Like if I'm kind of feeling like it needs some type of that photographic reality, but I'm not sure, then sometimes things link up that way too. So it moves both directions. Sometimes the music calls for a sound, and then sometimes, you know, you'll really know what that sound is and you go get it. And then other times it's just investigation. You're just like feeling it out. And then all of a sudden it clicks and there's the vibe.
We have some more music that we need to get to, and this is going to be the last track that we listen to together. It comes off of, I think it's your latest release from 2020. It's The Unknown Sea. It's a single out now. And this one was inspired by not a vista or not an idea, but a book that I want to ask you about after we listen. But we're going to listen to The Unknown Sea by Christopher Willits. Here we go. That was The Unknown Sea by Christopher Willits, and it was inspired by the book The Outlaw Ocean by Ian Urbina. When did you read that book, and what did you take away from it that informed this song?
It's an incredible book, and it's an amazing story that went behind this. I discovered a series of essays that were on the New York Times. It's called The Outlaw Ocean. And I started reading these and I was just fascinated. I love everything that has to do with the ocean. And I think it's a very unique space in our world because there's laws that don't apply. There's international waters and no one's taking responsibility or accountability for things that are happening there. So it's, for me, I feel like the oceans as a problem to solve in terms of like how we're protecting them, how we're not overfishing them, how we're not polluting them and things. If we can figure that out, it unlocks all these other problems for the climate crisis because it requires all countries to be on the same page about it because it's international waters, right? It's our shared home is the oceans. So I'm reading this stuff and a week later, Ian emails me. There was no connection. It was purely is this incredible synchronicity that happened. He's like, hey, I wrote these essays for the New York Times. I have this book that's going to be coming out. Would you like to make some music that's inspired for it? I was like, oh my God, of course. I was actually just reading these essays the other day. And so he sent me the draft of the book and I was just floored. It's truly one of the best books I've read in recent years. It's called Outlaw Ocean. It's broken up into these different, kind of like their own movies in a sense, these huge chapters that have their own narratives, looking at different angles of the complexity of the ocean, ranging everything from, pollution to, indentured servitude and slavery that's happening on the high seas, just all kinds of corrupt stuff that's going down that really hasn't had much attention that's been drawn to it. So this book has been really incredible for drawing more awareness into the issues that we have with our oceans. I knew right away it was going to be a pretty solemn piece. But at the same time, there's hope for change. So that was really what I wanted to convey within that piece, The Unknown Sea. It's unknown what our solutions are exactly right now. We have some actions that we can take, but it is a very big problem that first awareness needs to be spread that even this problem exists. And then we can come to the table as an international community and start to understand, okay, how do we actually start to stop subsidies for commercial fishing industry? How do we hold people accountable for how do we hold people accountable for worker protections on the high seas? What does that look like? I mean, there's all these really complex stuff that we have to figure out, but there's a huge hope that we can do it. As Chomsky says, you can either be a pessimist or an optimist. I'm definitely an optimist. I think we can solve this problem. And so hopefully, you know, this music is just kind of a step of reflection within that process. You know, it's challenging right now, but we've got an incredible opportunity to start to solve these problems.
What kind of techniques or instruments were you using for this particular track to kind of capture that idea of like the high seas and the open ocean and the background that you just explained?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's some field recordings that were in here. There's guitar. What's unique about this piece, which I haven't really like featured in a piece before, is there's a lot of viola. So my friend Cherith from Classical Revolution recorded these different lines and made a general chart of where the piece is going, and then stacked some harmonies for him. And he's such a pro. It was like one take basically of each of the harmony lines, and he just nailed it. And then I filtered that into some of my guitar processing that I usually use just for my guitar. I used that on some of the viola and then added more guitar to it just to give it this just kind of more symphonic and deeper vibe to it. So that was a really fun piece to work on. You know, I think my music, as I keep investigating like how things are moving and the space and the vibe that is coming through my music, it's going into that deeper, almost ambient contemporary classical kind of zone. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, I'm also on the back burner working on all this stuff that's just like really soulful, funky music as well. So I don't think I'm ever going to let go of like my like vast love and interest in like all music. I don't even think of genre. It's just all music. And it's got a vibe to it. It's got a heart and a soul to it, or it doesn't. And so let's make the stuff that ignites us, that inspires us and, you know, brings us together.
I think that's a beautiful place to sign off. We're running up on our time here. I could spend another hour talking to you, Christopher, to be honest.
Oh, likewise.
But I know you're really busy. Check out all of Christopher's discography. You can check out his website, which is christopherwillits.com. You can check out his music on Bandcamp. As you mentioned, he doesn't just make the three tracks that we listen to in the genres that you might think he makes. He has a huge range of music that he's released that you should check out. Where can people find you and talk to you and check out your music?
Yeah, you can, as you mentioned, hit up my website, christopherwillits.com, and feel free to, you know, hit me up on Instagram or Twitter or whatever. I love connecting with people. And so, you know, if you've got some thoughts about the music or experiences that you've had, would love to hear it. You know, there's tons of creators out there. There's tons of listeners out there. There's a overlap of both of them as well. And in whatever way I can aid your process in whether it's a deeper listening or it's, you know, you're creating, please, you know, let me know. I'm here to help. I'm here to serve. And yeah, please stay safe and creative, and let's get through these challenging times and use music as a tool to connect and rise above it and stay inspired. And let's solve some problems and let's have some fun doing it.
Definitely. And really quickly before we sign off, is there anything that people can be expecting to look forward to from you? Any projects that you might have coming up?
Yes. I cannot wait to share this new album. I don't know exactly when it's going to be done because it keeps going deeper and deeper. It's been an incredible process through this pandemic to make this music. It's really been an important medicine for everything that I've been experiencing. And so new album's on the way. We'll see when that's going to come out. Definitely no rush for it. And then with Envelop, we've got a bunch of fun stuff coming up. We've got a new piece. It's called Ocean. So speaking of the outlaw ocean, the UN World Ocean Day is happening the week of June 7th. We're having June 11th, an event called Ocean, just simply Ocean. This is an immersive soundscape that incorporates all kinds of sounds from the ocean using hydrophone recordings and some other music. I'm actually, some music from Sakamoto and I's album, Ocean Fire, is in there. some remix of The Unknown Sea is in there. So that's going to happen on June 11th in Envelope Stream. And we have reopened. We didn't even talk about that yet, but Envelope SF is back in action. We are so grateful that the community has kept us alive through the most challenging 14 months of our whole existence. And we're back and we're doing limited capacity events right now. So please, if you're in San Francisco, come through, say hello. I'm present at a number of the events, especially the Sound Baths, so the events that I'm playing, I'm always there. But the team is always there with a warm heart and would love to welcome you into the space. You know, right now we're only doing 24 people at a time, which is incredible, intimate listening experience. And yeah, we're back in action. So if there's ideas that you have, anyone listening who's a creator, want to create something out there in Envelope SF, hit us up in envelope.us. And you've got on the Connect page there, you can submit music for different events that we're doing. You can check out the schedule of events that's coming up, both on Envelope Stream or Online Space and also Envelope SF. So yeah. We are so grateful to be alive and serving the community and would love to meet you all in person whenever we can.
That was our episode with Christopher Willits. If you want to know more about Christopher, we'll have links to all of his projects and his website in the description. And make sure to give Fault Radio a follow on Instagram at @its_fault_radio. Check out our YouTube channel and check out our website, faultradio.com. And if you liked this episode, consider joining our Patreon. For the price of a cup of coffee, you can help support us and our nonprofit grassroots mission to preserve and highlight the artists and underground scene in the Bay Area. See you in the next episode.